Go.
What is happening, guys? Welcome back to the Wipeout Podcast. My name is Fernandez, and each and every episode, it is my goal to help you level up your movements and mindset so that you can live your fittest, most fulfilled life. And today, I'm really excited about this guest today, and you might be really excited as well, especially if you're a fan of Australian Ninja Warrior, because my guest today is none other than Ben Paulson, the first ever Australian Ninja Warrior. And this was a really cool episode because it went in some directions that I did not expect, but I'm so glad that it did go in those directions because I learned so much. And really, the takeaways for me were really about getting inside the mind of a champion, getting inside the mind of a highly competitive athlete that is really, you know, holds the title that no one else in his field in Australia gets to hold. We go really deep into Ben's journey, his journey through going through high school, getting bullied, and how that affected and how that shaped his fitness journey to the point where he competed at the level that he did. It's a really raw and honest conversation that I don't hear many champions or kind of elite athletes open up about their journey in the same way as this. We also go into his motivations for training and how that changed after he won the title. And we also talk about his mindsets around competing in high pressure environments and with a lot on the line. So this is such a widely varied conversation. Shout out the cockatoos in the background. This is such a widely varying conversation. You're gonna get a lot out of it, whether or not you wanna compete at a high level athletically, or you simply want to be the most grounded as possible and the most motivated as possible, training for the right reasons. So I really hope you guys enjoy this one. And without any further ado, please welcome Ben Paulson.
Let's do it.
Sick,
where do you wanna start?
Yeah, man. First of all, just wanna start by saying thanks for being here, man. It's really good to connect and I'm looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. You know, when I saw your email pop up, I'll be honest, I get a lot of emails with a similar title to what you put up. And for some reason, I'm getting a huge amount of spam at the moment with people with similar titles to that. So I almost immediately threw it to spam. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to click on it and just double check that it's not spam. Double check that it is. And yeah, when I read through, I was like, oh, actually, this just seems like a normal guy which wants to have a chat about health and fitness. So I looked into it a little bit more and I was like, yeah, okay, let's have a chat. So here we are. I'm glad I double checked that email.
Like, I got to work on my subject line game, man.
No, it was a good subject line. It was just, I'm getting a lot at the moment and they're all very good, but they're all like, hey, let's chat about health and fitness. Or like, how can I help you? So I don't think you did anything wrong. It was just a matter of luck.
Well, now's the time where I start pitching you to join my pyramid scheme. So this is live on. Yeah. Yeah, dude, I love if we can just kind of jump back from there and start to get some context on that journey to, yeah, just telling us a little bit about who you are and your journey, I guess, where that whole Ninja Warrior journey started for you.
Yeah, sure, man. So I guess for those that are listening that maybe don't know, Ninja Warrior, you know, it originated in Japan. It's essentially, you know, a bunch of obstacles which I swing around. And if you get through all the obstacles generally without failure, then you can win a huge prize money in the title. And so for me, I used to watch the show when I was a kid on SBS here in Australia and
shout out.
Late at night. Yeah. And just watch these like Japanese people fight over these obstacles and make their way to the top of Mount Midoriyama, which is like the final stage, which is a 20 meter rope climb in 30 seconds. So I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was awesome. And I'd be all outside swinging around, jumping around and trying to recreate the cool ninjas. And then when it came around to America, that's when it really kind of blew up in the Western world. And I've always watched it, but there was never anywhere here in Australia which was doing it. And it wasn't until a place called Ninja Academy here in Osborne Park in Perth, Western Australia, where it opened up and I thought, wow, this sounds like Ninja Academy. Like it sounds like one of the coolest places ever, right? And so my friend Will told me about it and he's like, let's go check it out. At the time I was doing CrossFit, just a lot of CrossFit. Before that, it was just all weightlifting. And I went and checked it out and I kind of fell in love pretty quickly. I think because I've got quite an addictive personality and I'll go at something really hard for like 6 months and then I'll kind of get bored of it and move to the next shiny thing. maybe that's the opposite of an addictive personality. I don't know. Addictive for short periods of time anyway. And I think Ninja, what it does for me is it allows me to just fulfill that need for the next shiny thing over and over again, because every obstacle is different and they're always coming out with new obstacles. So instead of just like weightlifting where it's like, okay, I mastered the bench press 100 kilos, now I go 110, now 120. It's not actually that more fulfilling. So I started to look into more movement-based things. And I know you're a movement coach, because I wanted to just not be strong. I wanted to actually use that for something other than just lifting weights to get even more strong. And so Ninja was like, Ninja and CrossFit were first to come out, and Ninja in particular was very, very challenging at the start. And I loved that I sucked at it because I enjoy the learning process so much of anything. Like right now I'm learning tennis and I suck at tennis, but I really enjoy those moments where something clicks and you're like, I don't know if I can swear. Actually, should I?
I'll try not to. I'll be offended, but you can keep going.
So essentially, like those moments where it clicks and you're just stoked because you couldn't do this thing, you know, an hour ago, a day ago, a week ago, and now you can do it. And you're like, what? Like, this is so cool. Like, obviously it struggled along the way, but now I can do it. And it just makes so much sense. And now it feels easy. And then you perfect it and it becomes second nature and everything like that. So with Ninja, when it came around, I could just do that over and over and over again with new obstacles. It was like never ending. And so it just kept me around for so long. And here I am like 6-7 years later, still doing it because they're still coming out with new obstacles. And it's fulfilling that kind of need for the next shiny thing. I don't know. That's probably a very long-winded, terrible way of explaining where cool, I am.
Man. But podcast over. I'm really glad to have had you on, man.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
Yeah, dude. Oh, that's so awesome. There's so much in there. And I'm so glad that you're still doing it and still enjoying it, because I have exactly the same thing when I transitioned out. I'm a fellow, you know, incredibly skinny stick of a human being for a lot of my life, and you know, totally. Got into the kind of bodybuilding or tried to get into the bodybuilding stuff early on, not with very much success.
Neither. Yeah. I was never gonna be Arnold Schwarzenegger, that's for sure.
No, for sure. Maybe like I'll be like the skinny half Indian counterpart, like the, I don't know. But yeah, when I started to make that transition into other things and learning more kind of bodyweight skills, like I kind of found some calisthenics stuff, and I know you've done some calisthenics stuff as well. Seen you banging out your front levers. But I found exactly that same kind of falling in love with the feeling of progression as well. And just been like, oh my God, like I'm not just adding a little 2.5 kilo plate on the end of my bar and doing the same thing forever and ever and ever. Like, you get to prove to yourself over and over again that you can come back and you can do new things. You build confidence because you're like, well, I was fucking really scared of that before. And now I'm smashing it. And it helps round your character out in so many more ways. Not that bodybuilding doesn't in any way, but I've personally found that it's been a lot more fulfilling and a lot more conducive to overall growth, because you're challenged in so many different ways and that stimulus is novel all the time.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's not just about, like, eventually a lot of people just start with strength and like weightlifting, because most of the time, especially young men, they just want to look a certain way. Most of the time why they start. And that's like, and usually people would go, that's an unhealthy approach to fitness, right? And I would usually agree, but I would actually at the same time totally disagree, because I think whatever gets you into the gym is the best thing for you, right? Like almost, like I'm sure there's certain scenarios, but as long as it's, because I guarantee at some point that kid, and you know, I'll speak for myself, will go in there initially because they want to look a certain way. But as time progresses, eventually they'll get strong and they'll do what you or I did, which is like, well, now I want to use this strength for something more than just looking good. Because trust me, like you get bored of just going to the gym every day just to look good. Because eventually when you start to look better, you're like, okay, well, now it's less fulfilling to keep rocking up to the gym. It's now just like maintenance. That's not as fun. So then you start to look at alternative ways of fitness. And then your goal shifts from, I just want to look good for myself, to now like, oh, I know I actually want to use this body and compete in things or learn skills or master something else. And you care less about the way you look generally. I don't know. That's certainly how it was for me and the vast majority of my friends. I don't know what it was like for you.
Yeah, man. I'm actually really glad we're going here. I didn't think we got this early, but this is something that I've been thinking about a lot as well. And this is one of the things I'm really excited to talk to you about, because a massive, I guess, part of what I want to communicate, my message, is that it's completely fucking okay to want to look better or more athletic or more muscular.
Oh yeah.
I think it's really, really important, and it's a little bit trendy as well to kind of demonize that and be like, it's all just vain, it's all just for aesthetics, it's empty. And there's certainly truth in that, you know. It's like you and I have both found, and you know, not that I'm some, you know, pinnacle of fitness physique, but at least, you know, on my own personal journey, I've definitely found that walking into the gym, you know, I got bullied quite a bit in high school as well, especially around my body. I was a really, really skinny kid. And it would sometimes be like pretty nasty bullying. And sometimes it'd just be even from my mates, like, you know, little jokes and little jabs that, yeah, like back at that age, I actually made really significant. And so
yeah,
I had a big, I guess, complex around the way that I looked, and associated that way that I looked and the way my body looked with all of the different things that I felt like I lacked at that time. And so there was this massive kind of complex around my body and needing to get, you know, perceiving the need to get bigger. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, it's helped a bit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'd be lying.
Yeah,
if, totally. I'd be lying if I said that there was no part of me that wanted to look, you know, athletic now that I've gone on this journey and I've realized that, oh, I'm above it all and shit like that. No, that's not the case at all. I really think that it's okay to want to look a certain way. And my computer keeps muting itself, which is really weird. it's perfectly okay. And in fact, I think it's really important because, like you said, it's going to get people in the door and it's going to get people to the gym.
I think you're completely right. And I think, you know, it's easy for adults to look at kids. And if some kid goes, oh, I'm getting bullied at school because I'm skinny, because if, you know, I'm sure you're aware, but a lot of maybe the audience doesn't know that I also got bullied all through high school for similar reasons, for the way I looked. And a lot of it was the fact that I was very skinny and I wasn't that tall necessarily until very later years of high school. I didn't have a lot of confidence, and kids reminded me of that every single day by the way I looked. And and so it's easy for an adult to go, oh, well, don't listen to those kids, or try and find they'll try and find a certain way to just tell the kid, you're perfect the way you are, you don't need to go to the gym, and almost like prevent them from going to the gym and exercising or doing those things. Because the kid wants to do it because he wants to feel more confident and bigger and stronger, because he keeps getting told every day that he's not that, and that he's skinny or that he's fat, right, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And the parents are like, don't listen to them, it's silly. It's easy to do that as an adult because you understand, right? You can look back on your own childhood and go, oh, it actually doesn't matter at the end of the day. We all are who we are. But as a kid, that's all you know and that's all you think about, right? And so I think the best thing to do is actually to allow the kid to go through that journey and go to the gym, even if it is just to try and look better, right? But as they're doing it, remind them the whole time that they don't need to be doing this, but if they want to, that's totally fine. And just make them, help them become self-aware, right? So, and self-awareness is very important because there's a lot of people out there which aren't very self-aware, and they just get stuck in the loop of doing things for other people, and they never have that click moment of like, why am I really doing this? And they never really question it, and it can get into a dangerous period where they just get addicted to going to the gym, which then gets them counting calories, which then leads to an eating disorder, and it all stems from being bullied in school. And I understand that, and it's a difficult and it's a traumatic thing.
Yeah.
I don't think the answer is to prevent those kids from going down that road at all in the first place, right? I think you need to allow kids to go down that road and make that mistake if it ends up being a mistake, but be a good parent and be nice to them and talk to them like a human being and help them become self-aware and ask, why are you really doing this? And is it important? And see the shift over time. Like at the start, they'll start like that. But over time, you need to, as a good parent, have a proper, honest conversation with them and sit them down and treat them like a human being, not just tell them, no, 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 you can't do that, because kids don't hear that. They just do what they want to do. And if you keep saying no, what they'll end up doing is push you further away, because they go, okay, now my parent is someone that I can't trust, because, and I'm not going to tell the truth to, because I'm going to go and do this regardless. And if they're telling me no, 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 and they're not listening to me, now I'm just not going to tell them anything anymore. And so the communication breaks down, and then the kid is more vulnerable to getting things like eating disorders and having a rough time, because now they can't even talk to their parents about it, right? And so I think it's like, your kids are going to do it. Your kids are going to think about it. Let them do it, but just be open and honest with the conversations along the entire time, and actually listen to them. Whereas I think too many parents go, no, 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 I'm just going to tell them no, and I'm going to be super strict, wrap them in bubble wrap, and try to watch over them 24/7 to make sure that they, you know, don't do anything wrong. And it's just, yeah. I don't think it's healthy. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Like,
oh, 100%, man. Like, I think this is where that kind of like base plate of unconditional love really comes in, because yeah, to understand that you're going to, whoever, this is a friend, this is, you know, a child, like even like, well, dude, no matter how you look in your body, like I'm still going to fucking love you. And if you choose to go and take power, and if you choose to go and do something about that, I'm going to fucking support you with all, because it does suck when people say shit like this. And I think that it's really important. Like you said, the self-awareness piece, you've got a great video on this as well. And I'd love to hear you talk into this a little bit more as well, kind of how you've gone on your journey and how you've developed this, because that's the only piece that's going to allow you to change that lie over time. Even if it's something that's pretty, you know, suffering based and pretty vain or pretty surface level in the beginning. You know, there's nothing surface level about being bullied and that going pretty deep in terms of trauma. So even if it is aesthetics and body based in the beginning, that allows you to go on that journey of taking back that confidence and, you know, and then changing that why further down the line, once you've kind of, you've gotten out of that place, and you're like, cool, what am I going to do now? So I'd love to hear you talk about, like, what was your journey with the self-awareness like? And even with your own kind of body, like coming out of high school, when did you start going to the gym? And what was that journey like for you before finding CrossFit and Ninja?
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, for me, the journey was similar to yourself, getting bullied through high school for the way I looked, and predominantly because I was a very skinny kid. And I lost a lot of majority of my confidence. You know, I used to be very, very out there growing up in primary school, friends with everyone, be silly, like just make silly juggling videos or whatever, post them online and get friends to look at it. And then it became, no, I just keep everything to myself because I'm afraid that, you know, I was afraid that even when I was in a classroom, as soon as the teacher left, my immediate thought was like, oh, fuck, here we go. I'm going to get bullied. Someone's going to say something about me. And they would. They would comment either, you know, on my skinny legs, or the color of my hair, because I had very ginger hair back then, or whatever it was, right? And so I lost all my confidence. And at some point, one of my friends, or my best friend, Elliot, he was hitting the gym and he was a little bit stronger than me. And I thought, I want to start doing that. I want to start trying building some muscle. And so I remember, I can't remember what birthday it was, but I was like very young and I asked for dumbbells for my birthday. And and they arrived and I was like, hell yeah, let's go. This is the start. And so I just started lifting weights. I didn't know what I was doing, but that didn't matter. I think it was just a healthy thing to do regardless. Right? I obviously wasn't doing the right sets, reps, no terrible diet, but that didn't really matter. I was just getting my feet wet. And then throughout time, I learned, I got better and better, and I did get very big and strong. And I remember actually the first time, by year 12, I was definitely a lot bigger and stronger and way more confident in walking around the school, that if someone said something about me, not that I would act on it and actually have a fight with them, but I felt like I could handle myself in that way if it ever came about. And that just gave me this like shield of armor without even needing to use it, or like this sword in my back pocket, which I'd never pull out, but I know it's there in case I need it. And it just like gives me this perceived confidence, because that's really what confidence is. It's like your perception of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like at the end of the day, it's not like, oh, once you work out enough, then you get handed this golden sword, which you can just use to feel confident with. It's like, you can have that whenever you want. It's up to your own perception of yourself. But sometimes it takes going down to the gym and working out and all that to earn it. And to prove this, I would say that we all have our own perception of what is fit and what is unfit. So for me at that point in time, I probably only had to put on a couple kilos of muscle, like not much over like a whole year period, right? And I'm sure naturally I just would have got bigger anyway. But me getting fit, right? My fit body would be someone else's very unfit body, right? But I'm comparing to my previous self. And that was the healthy thing. I stopped comparing to everyone else and I started comparing to my previous self. When you start the gym, you're purely comparing to everyone else because that's all you know. You have your body, that's all you've known, and then everyone else's body. And you're like, I want to get strong like that big, strong guy, right? Or the bully that bullies me, he's a big, strong guy. I want to get big like him. And then you start working out and eventually you do get stronger or you do lose weight, whatever it might be. And then you start comparing to other people and you start comparing to your previous self because now you have that to compare to. And that's cool. Then that gives you your new perception of, are you fit or are you unfit? And for me, I put on a couple of kilos of muscle, whatever it might've been over a year or whatever period. And now I considered myself fit and strong, right? I was still probably scrawny compared to the average person, but I felt fit and strong. And that gave me confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I say, in some of my videos, like my fit body is someone else's unfit body. And my unfit body is someone else's fit body, right? Yeah. It's all up to our own internal perception of what is fit and what is not fit. Like there's no like clear line necessarily. And so I did get confident and I felt more confident. And after high school, I remember coming back after a year of school and we had like a 1 year reunion or whatever. And all the comments from people were like, holy smokes, did you just like finish high school, get into the gym, not leave for the past 12 months and then come and then, you know, finally leave and come back today. Cause you look like jacked, bro. And it felt super good. Like it gave me so much confidence. I felt amazing. And I'd never felt like that in my entire life. But the transition happened when after that, I was kind of like, okay, well, this is good. And this is nice to feel like this and look like this. But I was kind of getting bored of just lifting weights all the time. Mm. I was never going to look like Arnold. I would have been maybe like 17 to 18 around this time. Yeah. So I remember started clubbing and I was very confident clubbing and it like blew my mind because in school I was the kid where I had a girlfriend and I'll say girlfriend because technically she was my girlfriend, but I was too afraid to kiss her. Because I thought that she would reject me, right? Like that's how lacking confidence I was, where this girl was like, we'd text every day, we'd see each other at school every day, would hug. And technically we said we're boyfriend and girlfriend, but we'd like walk over to a certain spot, like where no one is. And we'd be like, okay, let's like kiss. And then I'm like, I can't do it. Like I couldn't lean in and kiss her because I was afraid that she would reject me, right? I was just so afraid of all of that. I had no confidence. And you know, I think it's pretty safe to say that that relationship didn't last very long. And so anyway, when I got, to around the age of 18, I started going clubbing. At this point in time, I'd built up more confidence purely from just hitting the gym and feeling like, oh, I've got this, like this plate of armor that can protect me now. And I just feel and look better. And the confidence with women became way better. Like I would walk up to any girl at any club or any group of girls and introduce myself and say, hey, not in a creepy way. I just felt like this is a good opportunity. Let's go say, hey, they seem like a nice group of girls. And I just had so much confidence to do that. It blew my mind. Like that is the opposite of what I was in high school. And I'm very, very grateful for that. But that majority of that came from going to the gym. And I'm just going to keep talking, I guess, unless you cut me off anywhere.
Yeah, I'd actually love to
ask you. Unless you had any questions.
Yeah, I'd love to ask you because, you know, you were talking, I love your analogy around the comparison to somebody else versus the previous version of yourself. And that's so powerful. And one of the questions I was going to ask you was, well, what made you do that? Because that seems on the outside to be quite a powerful decision. But then when you were talking, sure. I was like, oh, okay, well, it was the achievement of you going and developing yourself in this particular area and proving to yourself that you could do something that you previously didn't do. I'm just going to put words in your mouth and then you can fucking
tell
if I fuck this up.
No, that's it. Yeah.
And, but then you were able to look back at a different self and you wouldn't have been able to have that relationship with the previous self had you not actually grown in that area of your life. So I think that's actually a really powerful thing just to know that. And we all have that, whether or not we can actually see that or not. You know what I mean? There's all there's ways in which we've grown and developed and things we've learned from and failures and insecurities that we can create distance from and look back in the past. And but it really is jumping out to me as well. Even that being said, that this level of kind of self-awareness is really powerful as well. And I'd love to hear you talk a bit about as well. Like, was that always a thing that was there? Do you think that was a kind of consequence of some of the trauma that you went through? Or how was your self-awareness developed?
I think, it's a good question. I think, you know, as an adult, it's much easier because our bodies fluctuate a lot more throughout the years. I mean, naturally they do. They can do it in 3-6 months, we can change quite a lot. As a kid, not as much. It's generally just a normal progression of puberty. And usually as adults, we'll do it more so in a negative way than a positive way, because we'll always go, during COVID, I put on weight. And you say I'm really unhealthy. And you might look at the person and go, oh, I'm really fat. And you look at them and you go, wow, you look fantastic, right? And that's because they're comparing to their previous self. And that's totally fine. Like, people are allowed to feel however they want to feel. But as a kid, to have the self-awareness to change from just comparing myself to everyone else to then comparing to my previous self, it is like a highly sense of self-awareness. And it's a tricky one. I've been trying to think for a long time how to make people become more self-aware. And essentially the way I see self-awareness is, the way I always do it is questioning your motives for things. And to think of that question in the first place. So for instance, why am I still doing this? Or why do I feel the lack of confidence? Or why am I comparing myself to other people? Or just like all these why questions I would ask myself all the time. And I've done that my entire life. And just going deeper than the surface level, because I think a lot of people go to the surface level. And for instance, it's like, why am I going to the gym? Or because I want to get fit. And they'll usually just like end there. I'm like, that's not, well, why do you want to get fit? Oh, I want to get fit because I want to, I want to like build muscle. Why do you want to build muscle? Oh, geez, I want to build muscle because I want to feel more confident. Why do you want to feel more confident? I guess maybe because I'm not feeling very confident. Why are you not feeling confident? Because I got bullied all the time. Maybe I guess it's because I got all the bullying I went through. And then it's like the deeper you're in, the lower you get, the more you start to understand why people choose to do things. And most of the time, it's tied to some sort of emotional thing, for the vast majority, especially when they're big life changes. Yeah. When you really break it down, majority of the time, it's usually something emotional that has happened, which has caused a chain reaction of things, which has ended that person in a certain place. So I feel like self-awareness is the ability to dive below those surface level questions and really get to that emotional thing. Mm-hmm. And for me, as a kid, I had a pretty good ability to do that. I think through bullying alone allowed me to be a really good, have really high emotional intelligence. Because people made me feel really crap all the time. I would notice that in other people when they were, made to feel like crap, or when they had a bad day or whatever it might be. And I would notice it in conversation to conversation, because I was thinking about it all the time, because I got bullied all the time, that I would then start to notice it in other people. And it gave me a huge amount of emotional awareness of other people. And it just made me question stuff so much, to the point where I actually became very, very self-aware. And as much as I hated getting bullied, it gave me this like superpower. I feel like it's a bit of a superpower to be able to see that in the world and see it within myself.
Yeah, dude. Does that make sense? I'm so glad you brought this up. This is something that another thing I've just been kind of grappling with in my head for quite some time as well, because I think that there is this really strange relationship between self-awareness and pain. or trauma, like essentially, you know, when you're bullied, when you're insulted, when you're forced in some kind of way out of pain to look at yourself and look at your own behavior and look at your own thoughts and examine, you know, you're just essentially when someone's giving you shit for the way you look or the way you act or something about yourself, you've got this mirror shoved in your face to look at yourself and over and over and over and over again. And that's an incredibly traumatic thing to go through. And, you know, I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, but you can kind of also see what happens on the other side when people don't have so much hardship in their life, especially growing up, and aren't really forced to look at themselves in the same kind of harsh light. And you see that the people that kind of often skyrocket to very high levels of success through many, you know, existing, you know, without the baggage, you know, call them privileges. And they often don't seem to have the same level of self-awareness because they haven't been forced over and over again to look at themselves in that same way. They kind of get to post through a little bit more. Not that it's easy really for anybody, but definitely more than some others, you know, to not have to examine their own behavior under such kind of, like I said, harsh light. So I agree. It's a sad reality. And I do believe that there are some, you know, you mentioned like the asking why several times and keep on asking why to the bottom of that. You can do this in a journal. You can do this out loud. Yeah. You can do this talking to a friend. And these are some ways that you can start to kind of drop under the surface without all of the pain and judgment. But I certainly noticed it as a trend.
Yeah. And I think, you know, on that point, you know, the people, which I'll call like the bullies back then, I think a lot of people that might ask questions about themselves, but they'll immediately answer it with a surface level answer, which is just generally like a protective mechanism so they don't have to dive any deeper.
Fucking scary.
Yeah, it's scary. Yeah. And I feel like the bullies, I'll just call them the bullies, but the people which, you know, usually bullied me, the very confident people in high school in particular, like now I completely realize that I feel sorry for them because I look at them and like they're much older now, so I don't really know them, but I at that point in time, they lack any sort of self-awareness. And that's very dangerous because it's really difficult to go through life without any sort of self-awareness or without any ability to deal with those questions when they come about, like the questions of like, why am I like the way I am? Or, you know, why does my dad hate me? Why does my parents hate me? I feel like shit. Why do I feel like shit? What am I doing with my life? And all of these questions, if people have no ability how to answer that, it's very, very difficult. And I feel like bullies don't have the people around them to talk to try and deal with that kind of stuff. So when the questions come about at late at night, when they're laying in bed, because everybody thinks about this stuff, doesn't matter who you are. Some people just get forced upon them every single day because they get bullied. But the people that are doing the bullying, I guarantee you will go to bed at night or have their alone time and they'll be thinking about thoughts about themselves and they'll get down and they won't have any sort of system to try and help them out. And then they'll usually kind of cover that with a fake kind of confidence.
I'm really glad you brought that up. And I'd love to kind of, start to move forward into your Ninja Warrior journey as well. And especially around your training. Because you kind of went from this guy who was just really curious, fell in love with a sport, had been really active your whole life. And then you started to take it a lot more seriously and it started to get a lot more real for you as well. So what was that journey like? And I guess, what did your training look like in the early days versus when you decided to take this more seriously and I guess go and compete on the show? What was that transition?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think for me, it was, you know, at the time I was doing CrossFit and I was loving CrossFit. Like I was addicted to it, like watching all the CrossFit games and doing all that. And then this gym, Ninja Academy, opened up. And once I checked it out, which is around 2016, I was like, okay, this is pretty cool, but I can't do CrossFit and Ninja at the same time because they both were very expensive. And so I had to choose one and I ended up choosing Ninja. And I was training there for about 6 and 9 months. And the training was very different from any other gym that I'd been to because it wasn't really training. It was pretty much like playtime. It was you rock up to the gym and you've got no plan. You just rock up and you start swinging around on obstacles, and then you meet other people, and then you're like, yo, let's meet up on Tuesday together and start doing this stuff. And then all of a sudden you see someone trying a handstand. So you're like, oh, I want to try a handstand too. And then people doing flips, and then people rock climbing. And you're like, I want to try all of this stuff. Yeah. And it was the first place where I felt truly comfortable to just completely be myself. And I would walk in there and there'd be people doing all sorts of weird stuff constantly, but nobody batted an eyelid. It was like totally fine. Whereas if you went to a normal gym and did a handstand, people would go like, what are you doing? Stop showing off, right? And they weren't showing off. They were just using their bodies and trying to learn new skills. And it was fun. That's what it was. So I did that. I did that for about 9 months until the show in Australia, Australian Ninja Warrior Season 1, was announced. And I was like, oh, this is good timing. So I applied naturally, and I did the fitness test, did the whole audition thing. I think at the time, like thousands and thousands of people applied. And you had to go through this rigorous process of multiple interviews, online stuff, creating a video, and then doing the fitness test as well, which was brutal. And then at the end of that, I remember the producers brought me to the side after the fitness test, and they said, hey, we just want to have a chat. We heard that you've been training here in the gym, and you've been actually doing well in the competitions, and you've been winning the competitions. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, all right, well, that's great to hear. I think maybe we'll see you in this season of Ninja Warrior. We can't confirm, but hopefully we will. And I was like,
they can never
like,
confirm or deny, can
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, they can never. Exactly. But I remember the day I found out was when I was actually at the time, I was mowing lawns for a living. I had my own gardening business. And I just finished this terrible job, which was just like a cleanup job. I was whippersnipping all of this crap in someone's backyard, and I had literally whippersnipped dog shit all over my own face, right? And I was there and I was cleaning myself after the day, getting all the shit off my face. And I got an email from Ninja Warrior, and it said, congratulations, you've been accepted into season one. And it was like one of the highlights of my entire life. I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like my fitness journey is taking me from getting bullied to then getting strong in the gym, and then trying to learn things like CrossFit and other things. And then now Ninja, and here I am about to go on national television because of it. This is awesome. The first kind of season was just like, take it as it comes. It was honestly felt like Christmas Day every day. Like it's hard to explain the excitement that came for season one. Like I couldn't sleep the night before. I was so excited to compete on the show. And it was a whirlwind of an experience. And I was very lucky to end up in like the top 10 ninjas at the end of the season. Never would have expected that, but you know, there I was, and I was very happy. And that kind of led me on to the next few seasons, where season two, I just wanted to kind of back up my first season, and I managed to do that in top 10 position as well. And then season three, I started to go, you know what? Like, I should probably start taking this serious. Like, am I just doing this to do it? Or should I, like, can I win this? Because I keep watching the American season, and people have won there. People have won all over the world. Like, someone is going to win this here in Australia one year. So, like, why can't it be me? And I really had to sit there and question myself. And this is, once again, the self-awareness, where I just started asking myself all these questions. I was like, first of all, do I think I can win? And I remember not being able to answer that, because I actually kind of wasn't sure. I was just kind of doing ninja. I didn't really have any goal. And I remember sitting there with a friend, Jack Wilson, who was the deadly ninja. He's an Aboriginal guy, massive part of the show, especially in the first few seasons. And I was sitting there and he was like, you know, are you going to win it one day? Like, do you want to win it? And I was like, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, I was like, maybe if I get there, I get there. And he's like, no. You have to believe it first, and then you'll see it. Don't wait till you see it to believe it. You have to believe it, then you'll see the results. And I was like, what? Like, what is this guy talking about? But I sat and I thought about it, and I was like, man, he's got a point. Like, unless I truly believe that I can actually win first, then I'm never going to put the things in place. I'm never going to take it serious, and I'm never actually going to reach it. And so I started to think about that. I was like, yeah, I actually truly believe that I can win if I really put my mindset into it, and it would be a massive goal to kind of set. And And then so season three, I went in and I was in a really, really good mindset. I'd been training super hard physically, but more so mentally, if anything, and kind of preparing myself to win, because winning a show like that, and for the people that are listening that maybe don't know, there's obviously the title, which was very important to me. It genuinely was. I really wanted that title because only one person can be the first. But then there's the prize money, and then there's the notoriety and all that kind of stuff as well. There's at that time was $300,000 in season three. And I was like, man, this could literally change my life to a good degree. And that's kind of a scary thought. So I was like, do I even want to win? Do I want all of that? Like, that's kind of scary. And maybe I'll lose all of my motivation if I win because I've won. And then it's like, what now? So I had to kind of answer that because I was actually kind of afraid to win it to a good degree. I was like, I was scared that I would lose all of this motivation if I won. And maybe it's not worth winning because I enjoy trying to win more than I actually do winning. Which sounds silly, but it's the truth.
Nah, you know? Yeah, 100%.
And so anyway, season three, I was super ready, super good. And then I had my worst season ever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the hell? Like, I fell super early. And I was like, man, I was mentally ready. I was physically ready. What can I learn from this? You know, like what, not necessarily what is this trying to teach me, but I mean, if I was religious, I would say, what is this trying to teach me? Mm. I'm not necessarily religious. So I was kind of like, what can I learn from this? And for me, it was like, I was very afraid to fail the whole time. I was like, if I fail, then I'm not going to reach my goal. And I'd never really failed early before. I'd always in the top 10 position. So it was something I'd never experienced. And when I experienced it, I was like, okay, I'm okay. I failed early. My season's completely over. Everything I worked for is completely over, but I'm actually totally okay with that. And I've survived. And a lot of ninjas don't survive. It may sound obvious, but a lot of ninjas do not survive. They literally fall into a depression and they quit the sport and I never see them in the gym ever again, right? It's a really brutal sport because people spend all year training for something and then they fall on like the second obstacle for a basic thing. It hurts. Like, it hurts your mind. Like, they fall into deep depressions and it's not nice to see. Mm-hmm. So I was afraid of that. And when I failed, I thought, okay, well, I'm totally okay. So then going to season four, I was completely relaxed. I was like, I'll be fine. If I fail, that's totally okay. I've done that before. I experienced that. I'm now no longer afraid of it. So I kind of gave myself permission to just go full send and try and win, knowing that no matter what happens, I'll be totally okay. And then I end up winning in season four. It was one of the highlights of my life for sure to take home that prize, climb Mount Midoriyama and win the prize money and the title. So it was mind blowing.
That's super powerful. I love what you said about the experiencing the failure being kind of like another little superpower that you had going into your season four where you actually won. Because
yeah,
you're right, that fear of failure is so powerful. I know definitely for myself as well in business and even in a moment in, you know, some skill training or, you know, like that, the significance that we attach to that failure can be super demonic inside your mind. You know what I mean? If it kind of runs away and there's so much power in experiencing it in full force. Cause I'm sure when you had that in season three, I'm sure it wasn't just like, oh, cool, I failed. That was awesome. I'm sure, you know, it was real fucking stuff.
Yeah, it sucked. Yeah, it definitely sucked for a while. Mm.
But that's such a powerful reframe as well, you know, for people listening, going through their own version of that in the future, or maybe looking back on that in the past as well, to be able to, again, you kind of choose what that means. And maybe that does mean that you're not good enough in air quotes, or, you know, you just kind of decide what that means for you. And if it does mean that you've now experienced that and that you're kind of free of the fear of that because you know that you're not going to die on the other side of that and you're still a person and you're still worthy on and all of that stuff, as cliche as it sounds, it really, really sounds like that was a massive piece in your mentality going into that fourth season.
Yeah, I agree. And what you said there, one thing you said, you know, I'll touch on, which is it's not necessarily the failure, which is the most important part. It's my perception of the failure, which is the most important part. And because everybody fails, but everybody perceives their own failure differently. And it's just like, you know, whatever happens in life, it's not necessarily what happens. It's how you perceive it that matters most. And so, you know, me and some other guy might've fallen on the exact same obstacle on the same season, right? And both failed and we're out of the season. And one of us will go, okay, what can I learn from this? And they'll see, try and find something to better themselves from that experience and learn and get better. And the other person will walk away and go, I'm a piece of shit. Why the fuck did I do that? That was the dumbest thing ever. I can't believe this. I'll never be good because I always mess up. And then they'll just keep replaying these negative things in their mind and they'll spiral downwards and they'll probably quit. Now, those are two people with the exact same experience with two completely different outcomes post that experience or that failure in the circumstance. And so it's really up to, once again, self-awareness, right? That's what it comes to. And that superpower of all those bullies bullying me gave me that superpower of self-awareness, where when I fail, I rarely, rarely beat myself up about it. In fact, a lot of the time now, I get excited to fail. Like I want to fail, because when you try something, in my mind, two things are going to happen. You're either going to win or you're going to learn. There's only two options. Failure only really happens if you learn absolutely nothing from it and you just beat yourself up and then you quit or whatever, right? That's probably a true failure. But that's not because you failed. It's because your perception of your failure. That's actually the more important thing.
And you can be like in that situation that you just described, like you and the other guy potentially that could have fallen on the same obstacle. Like it's another freeing thing is you can be both guys for a bit. You can be the guy that beats himself up. Like I know I definitely need to hear this as well. Cause I'm like, yeah, man, parts of me still beat myself up heaps. But at the same time, like it's okay to be that guy for a little while you still learn. And then after a little while, you get some distance and you kind of go through it. You process some stuff and you're like, no, fuck, now I can make up my mind about what I'm going to make this mean. And then you've got that choice to kind of take that on and to step into that new version of whatever you want to perceive this to be and whatever significance you want to attach to this kind of thing. And so even if you are beating yourself up heaps, or a part of you is, you know, then you can still make that transition. And like you said, it's kind of whenever you want.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I see it in a daily occurrence. Like I've been watching the Wimbledon finals recently with Nick Kyrgios versus Novak Djokovic. And I can see the difference. And look, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a psychologist or a sports psychologist or anything, but I feel like I've got a pretty good idea of what's going on when I see those players play. And both of them throughout the match make plenty of mistakes. That's just the way that tennis happens, right? They constantly hit wrong hits or they are in the wrong position. Novak, he is cool, calm, collected the entire time. Whereas Kyrgios gets really pissed off when things start to go sour. And I think that's because Novak has very high self-awareness and he knows his perception of his failures aren't that he's just a shit player or that he's fucking up or that external things are making him mess up. He's just like, oh, that was a bad shot, but that's totally okay. And it may happen again. It may not. And if it does, it doesn't, that's totally okay. I'm just going to hit my best game and recenter myself, right? And so like, he doesn't perceive it as this big nasty thing. Whereas I think Kyrgios, when I watch him make mistakes, he doesn't have the self-awareness to just be okay with it. Like he ends up just beating himself up, or he doesn't like to beat himself up. So he'll maybe portray it and push it onto other people, like external things that are happening, which really aren't important in the match. They're not the reason that you're losing the match, right? But they can, he doesn't want to admit that maybe, they can become it. That's right. And it's more so he'll tell himself that it's other things. It's not him. So then he doesn't have to admit that it's either his skill level or his mindset that are actually the biggest issue, because then that's him. He's the issue. And he doesn't want to admit that. So maybe he'll just push it onto other external things to help deal with it in the moment. And that's just a lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Whereas Novak is amazing at it and he'll always be the better player. He'll be way more consistent. And he'll go on to do great things. Whereas Kyrgios, until he fixes that mindset thing, he'll always be stuck in his own head, which is a shame.
Yeah. And I'd love to ask you about your kind of strategies around this, because it's, you know, it's kind of easy to say when, you know, let's say someone's sitting back at home, but like, yeah, you know, you should bloody, you know, get your head in the game. But I know from your own experience, you'd be standing up on that fucking stage, however many meters off the water. And I'm sure shit's real different up there. So when you were competing, or, you know, whether this is preseason or, you know, before, during, did you fall back on any kind of strategies or actions or mantras or breath work, or like, did you use anything to kind of help stay centered and get your head in the game, especially during that fourth season when you really felt like you kind of had it locked?
Yeah, I think, you know, the more practical, tangible things that I was using at the time was definitely mantras was a good one. So I forget where it came from, but it was like a bit of a let's go champ. And I think there was one which I would repeat to myself a lot in the lead up to the show. I'd sit there and I'd do some sort of meditation or mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And there was a string of kind of things that I would repeat, which is one of them was like, you will win Ninja Warrior. The universe has your back. You will inspire millions of kids. And there was a couple other things I can't remember off the top of my head, but I wrote down a list of important things which can happen and will happen, right? And I just wrote them down and I would repeat them to myself multiple times because that's like my strong why. Like why I said, why do I want to win? And once I worked out why I wanted to win and what it's going to give me, which I don't currently already have, or maybe it'll help me achieve what I currently have even more. And I would repeat that to myself, and that's different for everyone else. You know, for some people,
I might be like, "What that was? That why?"
At the time, it was very much I wanted to certainly inspire kids to live healthier. I guess live healthier lives. I mean, that's very generic. But to give myself a platform in order to talk to them and have a little bit more authority where people would actually listen to what I'm saying, because I've achieved this great thing. And it's true. That's just how the world works, right? Yeah. And I think the money never really actually came up as like one of the top things. Like it was obviously amazing and life-changing, but it actually wasn't my motivation to win, because it's really hard to stay motivated just purely for money. Like, and I needed something deeper than that. I needed actual meaning. And the meaning came from being able to help other people. That gave me more purpose than just trying to claw money. But back to some things which I would use in the lead up, definitely, you know, things like mantras, whatever it may be, telling yourself positive stuff every day, and usually having a couple of key lines which you'd repeat to yourself. Like during a workout, I'd constantly say like, fucking let's go champ. You've got this. You're the champ. You're going to win. You will become the first Australian Ninja Warrior. And I would tell myself this constantly, right? I'd be listening to music in the car and I just tell myself, and I'd visualize getting to the top of Mount Midoriya and hitting that buzzer, and like really imagining it happening in my head and trying to feel those emotions that I would feel in the future when it happens. And I would get like shivers down my spine and I'd just be like on top of the world. And I'm like, I'm going to fucking win Ninja Warrior. Let's go, champ. And this is just like me in my car driving to the gym, you know? And then like, but then it happens in real life.
Yeah.
And when it happened in real life, I wasn't shocked and I wasn't necessarily overly emotional when it happened. Like, you know, my partner Olivia was crying, but I wasn't that emotional because I like expected it to a degree, not expected it, but I'd almost done it so many times in my head and I told myself it's going to happen. And when it happened, it wasn't a complete surprise to me, which may sound arrogant to some people, but that's just the way I saw it, I guess.
Whatever that brings up for parts of you, you know, like there's real power in what you're saying as well, because that could, for two different people, it can mean maybe someone saying that and they're super arrogant, maybe they're not. It doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, what we're talking, well, it does matter, but for a separate thing, you know, like what we're talking about here is like, there's this real power of rehearsal that's shown up in real tangible kind of cognitive ways of like having rehearsings and neural connections and stuff like that. And then to whatever extent you believe in, you know, some other more universal factors and that kind of thing, like all of these different factors are at play for this rehearsal and this mantra kind of stuff. And notably, you're also doing the training as well. You're not sitting in your armchair and just, you know, visualizing and then doing fuck all, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, totally.
When everyone's doing the training, this kind of thing can really, really give people an edge. And it's awesome to hear. Thanks for sharing exactly what these kind of things are, because it's like it's a window into, the mind of someone that's done something pretty incredible athletically as well. So it's really cool, I think, to hear how much that played a role.
I think it gives the training, I feel like it gives the training more purpose. Like you feel a lot more purposeful when you're just, so you're not just going through the motions, you actually feel like there's something greater. Mm. And that gives you way more motivation to get up in the morning when you don't really feel like getting up in the morning and going to the gym. Having a super, super, super strong why is actually that fire that will ignite that. Yeah, you know, it's tough now. Like, I'm in the position now where, whether it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense, where I was kind of like, oh, if I win, well, I lose my motivation. And like, that definitely happened. I'll be completely honest. Like, I'm nowhere near as motivated for Ninja Warrior as I used to be. And I don't have any massive goal like that within sport like I used to have. And so now I'm probably more relatable to other people because people are listening and they're like, that's great, Ben, but we don't want to be a Ninja Warrior champion. So we can't really relate. So now I'm more in the position of the average person, which is like, well, why do I want to get fit? Like, why do I want to exercise and all that kind of stuff? And then I'm like, I'm trying to figure that out. At the moment, my main why is, number one, mental health, because I deal with a lot of anxiety and depressive spouts and stuff like that from time to time. And I think exercise is one of the number one things that kind of keeps me at a more consistent level and mentally. And I think after trying so many different things, the enjoyment factor of Ninja Warrior can wane off, especially because I've been at Ninja Academy for 6 years now, which, you know, it's great at the start, but after 6 years of going to the same gym, eventually it can get boring. That's nothing wrong with a gym or anything like that. It's just
like lifting weights, like doing anything.
Exactly. That's why I said earlier, like, I was trying things like tennis to try and reignite those. Like, maybe I'll hate it, maybe I'll like it, I don't know, but I'm gonna try. I'm figuring it out, but I know that in order to get to that place where I once was with Ninja Warrior, I need to just try things, I need to just do different things. That's the only way, because the only way I got to do that with Ninja Warrior is because I just tried going to this ninja gym one day. And then all of a sudden it led me on a 6-year journey and gave me this opportunity to have this massive goal, which motivated me like crazy for so many years. Yeah. That's all because I made the decision to go and try something new one day. I never knew it was going to happen, right? So I was like, well, I'm going to use that same theory and just go and try something new again. Maybe I'll fall in love with tennis and go crazy on it and be versing Novak Djokovic next year. I don't know. No, obviously not, but you get my point. Like, I'm just repeating history. I'm repeating, I learned what works and I'm just trying things, new things. Maybe I'll try archery next year. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think it is really beautiful to keep that open and to keep that creative spark alive and to not necessarily, to be okay with not necessarily knowing where that's going. You know, there's definitely like, I think looking forward into, you know, like older age and stuff like that, there's not always the ability to be motivated by this fire, this drive to be the best and to win, you know, like, we change priorities as we kind of grow older and this kind of thing. I'm sounding like fucking 80 years old right now, but like, after you go through that process of achieving something like that, it's really nice to hear you talk about, okay, exploring different things and not necessarily knowing exactly what that is. And it's okay to be in those places too. I think it'll give people a lot of permission around that as well. And that that's one of my favorite things about movement is that exploration thing is the entire thing. There's so many different things with the movements. It's everything, you know, it's everything from ninja to tennis to soft acrobatics to tumbling to fucking hand balancing. And it's all of that kind of stuff as well. And so something about incorporating more and more stuff into the way that you move your body allows you so much more novelty and spark and putting different things together creatively and connecting things and making it your own. And it might not give you the same level of edge and fucking motivation and pumping yourself up, but it does give you many other things. And it's really nice to be able to have a bit of both sometimes as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. I think it definitely summarizes. I feel like that's the best advice for what you just said is the best advice really for anyone that doesn't know what to do as far as they want to either get fit, whatever fit means for them is just freaking trying anything generally new and fresh, because it's always most exciting at the start. You never know where it's going to lead you. And like, I always think back to, you know, my early 20s, and I'm like, if I'd done this sport or if I'd tried that, where would that have taken me in my life? Because I was only just lucky that this gym opened up in Perth. If it didn't open up, would I ever have done ninja, or would my life be completely different? I don't know. And I still see that for the rest of my life. There may be things out there which I've never tried. You know, one irrational fear I have is that one day I'll just try everything and then I'll have nothing else to try. Yeah. It's this weird thought where I'm like, well, I just get bored of everything because I've tried it all. But like, obviously it's ridiculous. But that's, I get excited yeah. to just try new things because I know that one of them will just click for me. And yeah. it may be my next thing for the next year, 10 years, you know, 6 months, whatever. Yeah. And I feel like not enough people have that mindset. They just feel like, oh, I'll just go to a regular gym and then feel out of place and then quit. It's like, that's not what health and fitness is. It's what we get told it is, but it's not really what it is.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you're mentioning this now, you know, as we kind of start to land the plane a little bit, because yep. one of my favorite things that I've kind of teased out from your story overall, as you've been talking, is that, you know, you're a big, strong jack dude and all of that stuff that people are kind of Googling Googling the answers of how to do this stuff. But, you know, essentially what has happened at some stage in your journey is you just found what you fucking love to do.
Yeah.
And all of those different attributes and accolades come as part and parcel of your fucking training all the time. And this is available to everyone, is to find some, I mean, if it's, I don't know, like pool, maybe not, you know, you might not get the same kind of strength training benefits, but I mean, like, you know, active ways of moving your body. If you find ways of doing that, you fucking absolutely froth to do. The motivation piece is still important, but not nearly as important if you're showing up and you've got to motivate yourself to do something you fucking hate. So this is all that I try and expose people to, and, you know, with this podcast and stuff like that. And I'm so glad that we've kind of gone this direction, is because this trying stuff and experimenting and finding something that lights you up, and then taking that and fucking running with it and seeing where it can go. And it can go some pretty incredible places.
I completely agree. Yeah, yeah. Well said. And I'm sure a lot of people out there are maybe if teetering on the edge of just like trying something new because they're sick of the gym. Right now, listening to this podcast is the moment that you should go and do that. And you're like, well, then what do I do? It's like, I mean, that's a great question. Mm. Maybe start with Ninja Warrior. Maybe start with rock climbing. Literally anything. It doesn't, honestly, it doesn't matter. Just try something. I mean, look, you're a movement coach. I'm a Ninja Warrior. We never knew that we were going to be these people when we were younger, but here we are.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah, man. And I'd love to ask you, we've been talking a lot about, you know, the why and the importance of knowing that why for so many different things. And it's kind of like a base plate for on which everything else is built. And I'd love to just ask you in your experience, do you think that why is something that you find or something that you make?
Something that you find or something that you make? I feel like the idea of making a why implies that it's fabricated. And I feel like if it's fabricated, there's not a lot of strength behind it necessarily. I feel like the why a lot of the time is it ties to something emotional. And usually that emotion is based off your previous human experience.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so for me, my wife and Ninja Warrior, one of the biggest whys was to help inspire younger kids. And, you know, I was already doing that, but it would only boost that platform and allow me to do it even more on a bigger scale. Right. And the reason I have that why is because as a kid, I got bullied all the time and I was lost a little bit. And so that's the emotional side for me. That's where my why came from. Mm-hmm. My why wasn't money. Maybe if I was raised in a poorer, you know, world, then that would be a stronger why. But it necessarily, once again, it wouldn't actually be the money that's the why. It's the thing that the money would give me, which I didn't have growing up. Mm-hmm. That's the real why. So I think, once again, the why always has to be tied to some sort of emotion. And you can always ask a little bit more questions to try and get deeper and deeper, because the deeper you get, the more emotional it usually is. And you know, some people might be that they want to be around for their kids when they're older and not die young, and because they want to see their kids grow up. You know, it sounds morbid, but it's the truth. It's the complete truth. They don't want to have a heart attack. Maybe they got heart issues, whatever it might be. Like, all the sets, reps and exercises and diets isn't the reason you get up in the morning. You know, that doesn't matter. That comes secondary. So for people trying to figure out their why, even if it is because I'm getting bullied at school and I want to feel more confident, go do it. Go hit the gym. That's awesome. You know, go do you, because your why will change over time. It constantly changes. It's not going to be because I got bullied in high school, you know, when you're like 50 years old hitting the gym. The truth is that whatever gets you into the gym, go and do it. But I promise you, it's not all the sets and reps and exercises. That shit doesn't get you in the gym. You know, It really doesn't. It may for a week. You may have a bit of mental masturbation watching some pump up video, but it's not going to last, you know, so... Yeah,
that's a great answer, and I think it really gives people an actionable step as well to go back and just look at the stuff that's happened in their life and kind of go back to their timeline a little bit and see, what do I care about and what has happened to me and what feels like a strong driving emotion, what's something I finally maybe attached to some of those memories, and at least start to go and start that process of inquiry and then kind of see what comes up on the other side. But you've certainly been, I guess, going hard on the kind of inspiration route and education route as well through your YouTube channel as well, as Ben Echo. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'd love to hear, just in the kind of couple of minutes before we finish off, like, what's the direction that you hope to go with that channel, and what's the kind of message to you that you want to communicate going forwards?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was thinking about this a lot last night. Just, you know, YouTube's a funny thing. Because like it has been an amazing platform to help, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands, you know, millions, whatever, millions have watched it. And I'm sure a lot of them have got some value from it. And that's been a really powerful thing. I think for me though, is the direction I'm heading is, it's funny, like, I feel like I'm helping a lot of people. I myself and not getting a huge amount of fulfillment from it because I'm not actually interacting with these people. And it's one of the reasons why I did this podcast is because I miss having these kind of conversations.
Yeah.
Like I can stare at a camera and write a script and do a video and lots of people can get value from that. And that's awesome. But I'm not getting an exchange back from that. So it's kind of just like me putting all this stuff out constantly. And I'll read a few comments. Sure. Maybe you'll see a kid in the gym, which is like, yo, you're the reason I'm in this gym today. And that's always a really powerful thing. But for the vast majority of the time, it's pretty like the energy goes one way. It goes from me to the audience. And so I've been trying to think of a way to incorporate more conversations like this around all topics in life, not necessarily just fitness. Maybe like a podcast style thing, or maybe like a podcast which I can chop into shorter videos to put on YouTube and just go out into the street and meet people and chat to them. And who knows, you know, watch this space, but we'll see where it leads me. But I think I would just like some more human interaction in my videos, because I feel like too much of the time it's just solo and it can get lonely. So we'll see.
Yeah, dude. Well, I'm fucking excited to watch this space and to see what comes of it. And for anyone listening that wants to go check it out, this is Ben Echo on YouTube, and you've got a ton of really, really interesting, and I highly recommend the ones around mindset and engaging with kind of the gym and motivation and stuff like that. I know that's really helped me personally. And so I really encourage people to go check that out. And is there anywhere else that you'd like people to go and direct them to watch what you're going to be doing in the future?
To be honest, I think YouTube's the best one. I mean, there's obviously Instagram, but I don't really use that for much. Jump on YouTube, Ben Echo or Ben Paulson, just online. That's cool that I can say that now. Just Google me. Such a flex.
If you Google my name, you'll find some like middle-aged Spanish dude like staring.
Sure.
Dude, this has been super fun. I really appreciate your time and coming on. And it's been great to chat, man.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate everything you're doing out there. You're doing great things, and be keen to hear the response from people, and I'll keep listening to your podcast, bro.
Go.
Thank you very much for tuning in, guys. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. And as always, guys, if you want to find out more or go chase up some of the things that we spoke about in this podcast, then I do show notes for every single episode. So you can go over to whitebelt.com, that's whytebelt.com/podcast, and you can find all the show notes for this episode over there. You can also find a link to Ben's YouTube channel. I'll also leave it in the description below, and you can just search YouTube for Ben Echo and go and check out the awesome videos that he's got there. The man is hilarious. He also makes really, really great content around your motivations for training. And if you enjoyed what you heard here on this podcast, I highly recommend you go and check that out. And last but not least, guys, if you were just bored shitless in the gym and you're done with doing the same fucking
big four movements every single day of your life, and you want to still build a strong, resilient, and muscular body, but you also want to add in some mobility and learn some cool bodyweight strength skills at the same time, then you can head over to my website, whitebelt.com/train, and you can find out more about working one-on-one with me from wherever you are in the world. I do not discriminate. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you got a lot out of it, and I'll catch you in the next one.